Jesus wanted us to understand that the glory, the beauty, the value of those who remain faithful unto death is beyond anything that we can comprehend. It's like a treasure hidden in a field. But Jesus wants it very clearly understood that you have to sell all that you have to get it. This is the nature of perseverance. It's something that we have to try to teach to our children. Many times, people like Rachel did, but I'm sure she's old enough now not to have done that, but when you buy a new car, if all you look at is the car, you don't think about the insurance, you don't think about the payment, you don't think about the fuel, you don't think about all of the maintenance, and you don't add in everything that it's going to cost you to buy that car, you may find yourself very quickly wishing that you hadn't done that. And Jesus gives us that same warning. He that was sown upon the rocky places hears the word, straightway with joy receives it. But he doesn't think it through. And brethren, this is our responsibility as Christians when we're talking to people, is to help them understand, yes, if you obey the gospel, you can go to heaven. And yes, if you obey the gospel, you will have eternal life and you will enjoy the resurrection from the dead. But the cost is very high. The difficulties and the trials, there's nothing, as Jesus points out, there's nothing on this earth worth more than that treasure hidden in a field. And there's nothing in this life that will cost more than our wanting to buy it. And so, as Jesus said, he that was sown upon the rocky places hears the word and straightway with joy receives it, yet has not root in himself. He hasn't sat down and counted the cost. As Jesus points out in another parable in the book of Luke, which man, wanting to build a tower, does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has what he needs to finish it? Else, he lays the foundation, and then he is never able to complete it, and everybody looks and says, this man couldn't finish what he started. As Peter said, it would be better not to know the way of the Lord than having known it to turn back. You don't want a tower half finished. You don't want to take that first step into Christianity and then have buyer's remorse. Then say, I had no idea this was going to cost this much. Part of that is the fault of the preacher. Part of it is the fault of the individual. And that needs to be fixed very quickly. Because Jesus does not give us any question whatsoever. If a man wants to come after me, let him deny himself, pick up his cross, and follow me. If you love father or mother, son or daughter, husband or wife, or your own life more than me, you're not worthy of me. That needs to be understood. Yes, the joys, the benefits of Christianity, answered prayer, comfort and peace, eternal life, those are worth all of our sacrifices. But too often, people are not properly prepared for those sacrifices. And that's what this lesson is going to be dealing with, and that's what this word that God has given to us, this word perseverance, or patience, or endurance. So, God did not call us to be rewarded immediately. I think this is the problem with most people. You go buy the car, you get to drive the car home, and what a night. Got a new car. This is so beautiful. Week later, here comes your car payment. Here comes the insurance payment. Then you have to go fill it up with gas. Then the tire goes flat, and you have to buy a new tire. And then, and pretty soon, going, what have I done? What have I done to myself? Well, if you had a good father who sat you down and said, now look, this car is going to be wonderful, but you have to understand, here's the price it's going to be, and then they take it in stride. I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming. Because perseverance changes everything. The seed in the good ground These are the ones who have heard the word in an honest and good heart and hold it fast and bear fruit with patience. There's no difference between the rocky soil and the good soil, except the good soil is prepared for those sacrifices and doesn't allow the root to stop going down. When people start thinking to themselves, I had no idea it was going to cost this much. Did I make a good decision? That's a rock. And if we don't have enough faith to see past that rock, we will wither. And we've seen people do it. But since perseverance is the difference between a rocky heart and a good and honest heart, isn't it wise to seek it? Isn't it wise to make an assessment? How much of this do I have? Have you ever sat down and thought about that? What price would I have to pay that I don't think I could pay? And I've been thinking a lot about that recently because I've been watching. There's somebody in Canada right now who is in jail because he decided to attend and protest a homosexual reading, and they threw him in jail. And I thought to myself, what would I do? Could I handle being in jail for the rest of my life because I preached a sermon like the one I preached this morning? And if I couldn't, then what do I need to do to get there? Because I can't stop preaching like that. So I have to make a choice. Would I be willing to go to my death? Am I prepared that if tomorrow a stance that I have taken that's in the scriptures is going to cost me or you, what are we willing to pay? Would you give your life? Would you give your liberty? Would you give your freedom? Would you give all your possessions? These are questions. You look at Job, you look at the prophets, and you say to yourself, this is possible. That which has been is that which will be. And so we have to think a lot about this, because that initial excitement over any new purchase, including this one, sitting down with joy, selling all that he has to buy the field. But sooner or later, the price is going to get too high. And when that day comes, we have to have the faith to leap over it. And it all comes down to perspective. When Moses became of age, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Now, Moses was 40 years old when this happened. He had a lot of time to think through, if I do this, if I do this, if I do this, here's the consequences, here's the benefits, here's the problem. Just like we all do. We get a piece of paper out, we're going to make a big decision, we put the decision at the top, and then we look at the positives and the negatives, and we go down through and we say to ourselves, the positives outweigh the negatives, I'm doing it. The positives are equal to the negatives, I've got to think about this a little more. And the last one, if the positives don't even come close to the negatives. Now, sadly, Christians go through those phases. Sometimes you think about, what have I got to do? And you start adding it up. Sometimes you can think of everything, sometimes you can't. But here's Moses, verse 25, choosing to suffer affliction with the people of God. Now, isn't it interesting? The affliction comes first. The reward comes second. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God. He knew it was going to cost him. He knew they were slaves. He knew it was not going to be easy to get them out of Egypt. Verse 26, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked to the reward. So it was the reward that led him to want to make those sacrifices. And that's where we come into, I think, the wisdom. You want the car. I've never had a car like this car. Never spent this much money. I thought it through. I decided, I don't know if I want to do this. Well, I want to do this. I know everything. I made the choice. And I'm not going to be surprised, and I'm not going to look at it on regret. Or I'm not going to look back on it with regret. That's what Moses did. I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure that's what I did when I became a Christian, but that was almost 50 years ago now, so it's hard to know exactly. I like to put ourselves up and say, oh, I was the perfect one. But I think that that was something that, and I hope all of us can remember that. Moses looked at the affliction. He looked at the reproach, verse 26. He looked at the afflictions and the reproach, and he said to himself, that's a small price to pay for the greater riches. That's what Jesus said in the parable of the hidden treasure. But it's also what he warned us about in the parable of the sower. So Moses looked at the reward. I wonder sometimes when he told God, please kill me. If you love me, would you kill me? I don't want to see this wretchedness anymore. Moses, it got worse. It got tough. He never, ever, ever failed God. He never, ever shrank back. Verse 27, by faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. He endured, there's that word, he endured. Why? He was seeing him who is invisible. I will never fail you. I will never forsake you. With good courage you can say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do? What reproach can equal the power of the living God to get us through it? That's what got Job through it. That's what got Moses through it. And that's what has caused other people to fall short, like those grasshoppers in the book of Numbers, who couldn't see the power of God, like Joshua and Caleb. Joshua and Caleb were ready to suffer anything because they knew God would get them through it. But those 10 spies, we can't do this. We're just grasshoppers. Well, when you get the grasshopper mentality, just mark it down. It's not going to be long before you're going to tell yourself, it's just not worth it. I can't do it. The definition of perseverance is from a compound Greek word, and that's why I have two different colors there, although you can't see them real well. The first hupo is in green, the other is in yellow. But the point is, the first word means to be under, to stay under something. The second word means to abide there. So here's this crushing problem, and here's my decision, I'm staying under this. I've counted the cost, ready to pay the price. What's the price? I don't know yet. I don't know yet. I might be one of those people who's cut in half. Am I ready for that? I might be one of those people who's slain with a sword. We might be one of those people who is going about in sheepskins and goatskins, afflicted, ill-treated. We might be people who are living in caves and holes in the earth. We don't know what's coming. Any of that could come. I'm staying. I'm remaining under that. Because, as we'll see in a few moments, the benefits far outweigh the temporary costs. The other definition of the word is steadfastness, constancy, endurance. Life does this, but the Christian is doing this. Nothing is moving him. He is not swayed. Not swayed by anything. As we'll see with Job. Job lost his family. He lost his health. He lost his possessions. And he found out he had no friends. He lost all of his friends because his friends turned out to be fair weather friends. So here's poor Job. His wife has said, curse God and to die. So she's gone. His three friends are accusing him of being a sinner. And there's some envy and other problems going on there that God in the end says, you have not spoken of me what is right. And if Job is the only one who can save you now. He needs to pray for you. You need to go to him and ask him to pray for you. My brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. Indeed, we count them blessed who endured. This is something I learned many, many years ago. A sacrifice on the front end is so difficult. But on the back end, as you look back on it, it's one of the things you can be proud of. It's one of the things that you look back on and you think to yourself, I'm so glad that happened. Now, when we get to heaven and we stand before God, it's going to be those moments of sacrifice, of tough decisions, of getting past whatever the trial is. We count them blessed who endured. And we do. We look at Job. Now, if I was on the other side and I was Job, I wouldn't be saying, I'm blessed. But on this side, looking back, we count them blessed who endured. And on the judgment day, how does the book of Revelation put it? Their works will follow them. I hope we all have those kind of works. Continuing here, you have heard of the patience or perseverance or endurance of Job, and have seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. Have you thought about that? That actually what God did for Job was compassionate and merciful? How in the world could that be? God's the one who put him in those situations. Yes, but he helped him with it. And we'll see that with Jesus later on, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. Why? Because he saw the end that was intended by the Lord. That actually God is very compassionate and very merciful. Hard to see that in the Son of God being crucified. But afterward, as we look at the trial and we see what God was able to do with it, we come to the same conclusion. Now, there's two tiers of persecution. I'm sorry, perseverance. The first is we become aware. And that's really what this lesson is kind of designed for. If you're here and you're hearing this for the first time, I just want to be the first one to let you know, Christianity is going to be the greatest expense, and it's going to cost you the most, and it's going to be the most difficulty, and it's going to cause you more agony than any other decision you ever make. And I can show you verse after verse after verse that teaches that. So we need to become aware. Not going to be an easy task. I think that's one of the failures that some people make when they preach the gospel. They paint the rosy side of Christianity. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it needs to be balanced. Because if you give people the wrong impression, you're not their friend. So first, we have to... not going to be easy. So we count the cost. Now this is coming. I took this slide out of a sermon I preached on adding to your faith, virtue, knowledge, self-control, and perseverance. And that's this word here. So first, we count the cost, which is virtue. I'm going to pay the price. That's what virtue is. Then I'm going to get the knowledge. This isn't a strange thing. Look at Peter's there. Do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you. This is normal. It's very normal for people to go through fiery trials. Now, they're not always like the one Peter's talking about here and the one that perhaps we're on the cusp of, which is the whole world turning upside down and Christians being viewed as enemies of the state. But it wouldn't have to be that. Job didn't go through that, but he had a fiery trial. He lost his health. He lost his possessions. He lost his family. Don't think it strange when those kind of things happen. As though something strange happened. But rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's sufferings. So, the issue. Does Job have perseverance? Satan didn't think he did. You remember what Satan said to God? If you take away the hedge, he'll curse you to your face. He doesn't have any perseverance. He can't handle trial. Job arose, tore his robe, shaved his head, fell to the ground, and worshipped. Satan was wrong. God knew he was wrong. God would have never allowed him to be tempted above what he's able to bear. Verse 21, he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb." In other words, everything I have is a gift from God. Every pleasure that I've ever enjoyed, I didn't deserve it. It was a gift from God. I came naked. Everything I have is God's. I will return naked. I don't have any expectations or demands that God has to give me a level life of enjoyment and peace and prosperity and ease. I never expected that. No Christian should. I came naked, going back naked. The Lord gave. The Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. There is perseverance in its purest and most beautiful smelling form. This man had endured more than any of us will ever have to endure in a single day, to hear the things that he heard. But in all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. This is the problem with perseverance, or excuse me, with the lack of perseverance. When we go through something tough, we start saying to ourselves, God, why are you doing this to me? That's charging God foolishly. Because God would never, he might allow it to happen to strengthen us, or it may just be time and chance, or it may be the result of our own foolish decisions. But to charge God foolishly is what perseverance will never allow. Because once you start down that path, you're going down. When you start blaming God for your set of circumstances, you don't have anyone to help you. You are on your own. Because you've just laid God with the reason for the problem. So how can you come to him for help? So Job lost his health, reputation, wife support, all alone. His three friends refused. They refused to comfort him. I often think that these men became Satan's greatest tool. And we need to think about that. When we are called to go and talk to someone who's going through severe trials, we need to be very, very careful what we say. Because if we say the wrong things, we speak, as Job said at the end of his life, or at the end of his trials, he said, I have spoken words without knowledge. And that's what God accused him of doing. So these three friends were doing that also. So left with no answers, no relief, and no comforter, he endured. Satan didn't think. God did. But Job suffered for a purpose. We all do. All suffering seems for the moment not to be joyous but grievous, but afterward yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness. Every act, every problem, whether we brought it on ourselves, whether it was time and chance, whether it was God trying to help us and teach us something, take something that we needed to lose so that we could understand and get our priorities back where they belong, we need to thank God, regardless, because it can help us. Let's skip that. So there's no easy way here. When you come out of water baptism and you tell yourself, all right, now I need perseverance. Now I need to be able to do this. Where do I get it? Well, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience or perseverance or endurance. And let that patience, perseverance, and endurance have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. You see, this takes away the rocks, and it takes away the thorns. And it leaves a good and honest heart. And that's why he says, it will have its perfect work, and you will be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. The first time we can get through an unexpected trial, and we can look back on it and see the blessedness, just like the prophets, we should be rejoicing. We should be counting it all joy. I'm glad that happened. Now, some of us are thinking, well, I don't know how to do that. Well, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. So perseverance, fertilized, watered by prayer. It is strengthened by prayer. We don't always have the wisdom. Job struggled. He didn't know why. And after his friends got him to thinking about, well, wait a minute, did I bring this on myself? No, I didn't. I didn't do anything to bring it on myself. And gradually he moved to, this is all God's fault. God is persecuting me without a cause. And that's why God has to call him up short at the end. But the mercy of God forgave him. He became a better man. So when we go through these things, whatever they might be, it might be financial issues, health issues, could be persecution issues, could be any number of things. Are we ready? Well, of course, none of us can say I'm ready. But the nice thing about perseverance is I've done this, I've done this, I've done this. I can look back and I can see that I'm growing. And I know God will never tempt me above what I'm able to bear. So the sign that we are adding perseverance, is that in the midst of the pain, we still feel joy. Now, let me illustrate this with what Paul said about the Olympic contenders in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. He tells us there that everyone runs and one receives the prize, but they all run with endurance. And the endurance is the joy of the pain. If I can do more today than I did yesterday, I can hardly walk, I need to take a bath, I can hardly sleep, I hurt, but there's joy. I did it. Being therefore justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom also we have had access by faith into this grace wherein we stand. Now, there's the man who's sold all that he has, he's bought the field, and he's happy, but then let's keep going. We rejoice in hope of the glory of God, and not only so, but we also rejoice in our tribulations. The very thing that caused the man to straightway with joy receive it is now the same thing that he feels as he goes through the tribulations. That's a very different man than the one we're reading about in the parable of the sower, who when the tribulations come, straightway falls. This one straightway rejoices. So that's the sign. When you can go through a trial that you weren't expecting, and you can come through it with joy, then you know that you're adding perseverance. It's exactly what James said. Count it all joy when you fall into manifold trials, because it works patience. When you're feeling that joy, then you know it's working patience. Verse 3, not only so, but we also rejoice in our tribulations, knowing that tribulation works perseverance. In other words, I can do it. Don't know what the next trial will be. No, it won't be above what I'm able to bear. I'm going to do it. I'm going to keep leapfrogging. I'm going to keep jumping higher and higher and higher. Knowing that patience works perseverance, or tribulation works perseverance. Perseverance creates approvedness. Now, approvedness is a word that means something that's been put to the test and you know it's genuine. And to know that you're genuine after all these years, to be able to look back on your life and tell yourself, I've gone through a lot. And that proves that God is looking down upon me with favor. And then that approvedness brings hope. And so as Peter said, in this you greatly rejoice. Though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials. Now, once again, he's going to be talking about persecution trials, but there's other trials. Grieved by various trials, things you weren't expecting. Life doesn't always go the way we think it should. It has nothing to do with God. It has to do with things that were started before, oftentimes before we became a Christian. Sometimes they were started at the moment we were born. We were born from a mom and a dad with certain proclivities toward cancer, toward heart disease, toward dying young, toward going through terrible tribulations. It's not God's fault. Why did you make me thus? No, it's not God's fault. It's part of living in a sin-cursed world, and we recognize that we are not here for eternity. You greatly rejoice, though grieved by various trials, that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold. Now here we come back to that. Straightway he sells all that he has to buy the field. This ability to be able to be grieved by various trials and endure more precious than gold. Now, we may or may not see it that way, but we need to see it that way. Because like I said, what we've been through up to this point in our life may barely be enough to get us through what's coming next, or it may not be enough at all. That's why we need to be praying. We don't know what's coming. Jesus told the people that the Jerusalem was going to be destroyed. They had no idea the terrible nature of what that was going to be. though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory. Now, that's not God's praise, honor, and glory. It's our praise, honor, and glory. Isn't that amazing that God will give us praise, honor, and glory just because we can get through trials and show Him our faith is genuine? And yet, that's exactly what He says here. So in Hebrews chapter 12, it says this: Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, those prophets we read about earlier, Job, Jesus, the apostles, we have a huge group of people we can look back on. We can look at the failures, we can look at the successes. A great cloud of witnesses. Let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance, there's that word, the race that is set before us. We're going to stub our toe. We're going to trip over rocks. We're going to fall down. We're going to run with perseverance, because nothing is going to be given easily. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before Him endured the cross. There's that word joy again. Who for the joy sold all that He had to buy that field. Straightway with joy they receive it, but have no root in themselves. There's a huge difference between those two people. Jesus saw the joy in the pain. Now, in the Garden of Gethsemane, we see the struggle. Even the Son of God, we see the struggle, the price that I must pay. I don't want to drink it. If there's any way around this, Father, let this cup pass from me. But at some point, after those strong cries and that agony and that praying and that asking, Thy will be done. He endured the cross, despised the shame, just like Moses, just like Job, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider Him who has endured such hostility by sinners against Himself, so that you may not grow weary and lose heart. This is an important part of what we're supposed to learn during the Lord's Supper. Because should that happen to us, all those thoughts we've had about the Lord, not a strange thing. But the Hebrew writer had already said this: you have need of endurance, so that after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise. For yet a little while, He who is coming will come, and will not tarry. Now, that's a quote from Habakkuk. We looked at this just last week. Habakkuk says, Lord, when are you going to do something about the wickedness in Judah? And God says, I already am. I'm raising up Babylon, and they're going to come in, and they're going to destroy the entire nation and remove all of this wickedness, and only a few are going to be left. And Habakkuk says, Lord, that's not quite what I had in mind. And then the Lord said this: I'll get a little while. He who is coming will come and will not tarry. You are not going to avoid this, Habakkuk. Now, I don't know if he lived or died before that happened, because it's very difficult to pinpoint exactly where Habakkuk was in the history of all of this. But whether he lived or not, he who is coming, Babylon is coming. And he's not going to tarry. Now the just or the righteous will live by faith. And if anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him. God has given us everything we need to get through this life. If we have to feel like we have to quit, if we have to be that man who falls, don't think the Lord's going to have any sympathy for you. He's not going to have any sympathy. If anyone draws back, there is no excuse. It's a lack of faith. It's a lack of trust. It's a lack of perseverance. That's why I say we are nobody's friend if we don't teach them this, if not before they become a Christian, very quickly after. If anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him. We are not of those who draw back, but of those who believe to the saving of the soul. But look back up. You have need of perseverance, endurance, patience. That's the only thing. Because, as God says, if you faint in the day of adversity, there's only one reason why. It's not God. You can blame it on God, but the real problem is you don't have enough strength, and it's your fault. And that's why we need to do this. So, our last slide. I endure all things for the sake of the elect, that they may also obtain salvation, which is in Christ Jesus with eternal glory. This is a faithful saying. If we died with him, now we die with him when we're buried with him in baptism. We die with him in the water of baptism. If we die with him, we will also live with him. If we endure, we shall reign with him. If we deny him, now there's your choices. You can endure, you can have perseverance, or you can deny him. You can say, I don't believe in Jesus anymore. I'm not going to be a Christian anymore. It costs us too high. If you deny him, he will deny you. But if we become faithless, he will remain faithful. He's already said what he's going to do with these things. He's already warned us. If you can't have faith unto the saving of your soul, you're not worthy of me. He that loveth son or daughter, husband or wife, is not worthy of me. We deny him. He will deny us. If we are faithless, he remains faithful. He cannot deny himself. Remind them of these things. And that's what I've done this evening. I'm reminding you of these things. Don't know what tomorrow might bring. Might bring the most wonderful blessings that we've ever had, or it may be the most difficult time in our lives. We just don't get to know that. Might die tonight. Never have to see any of these things. Although for most people, death is not exactly the solution to not having endurance. As we close the lesson, I just want us to think about this. The rewards are far greater than the pain and the loss. Now, we may not know this until this life is over, but that's where our faith takes us to the next level. And so, brethren, as we conclude our lesson this evening, I hope that each one of us will give careful consideration. Are you ready? I'm not talking about are you ready for the judgment day. I'm talking, are you ready for the next persecution, the next tribulation, the next trial, the next situation that is going to test us? As we conclude our lesson, we're going to sing the song of encouragement. If there's anyone here who needs a prayer to the congregation for anything, if there's anyone here who needs to go home and reflect on these things and maybe have a change of heart, if there's anyone who hasn't obeyed the gospel yet, we invite you to come while we together stand and sing.